You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, December 1st, 2010. This is episode 160, DIGO. We are back again with another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. This is our first edition in the month of December, and boy, do we have a cast of characters today, not the least of which is my regular podcast partner sharing the microphone from Sleepy Eye, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. We're snowed in here in Sleepy Eye. I had our first official school cancellation.
I saw that. Boy, is that
yesterday.
Depressing.
Winter has arrived.
We have not gotten that, so I'm very thankful that it was that the Lord just saved that for you guys.
Thanks, Martin.
Yep. snow days aren't all bad, though, are they?
Nah.
Except when it's on November 30th.
Yeah.
All right, but joining us as per usual, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent is Gail Potratz from New London, Wisconsin. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, everybody.
And we have a very special guest who we've had on the show before, but this one we're going to let him talk the whole show if he would like, and that is Jason Schmidt. Jason, Omaha, correct?
That's correct. Yes,
Omaha.
I'm still here in the heartland, Sally. You guys got all of our snow that fell down here. It just blew into one big drift into Sleepy Eye.
We definitely had some big drifts here in Sleepy Eye. So.
Beautiful.
Thanks for sending it our way.
So,
oh, no problem.
As you can probably guess, our focus is going to be on classroom technology and educational technology in general. And as Gail and Jason serve in call teaching positions, they have some firsthand experience. But one reason we wanted Jason on is that he's been a heavy user, as have I, lately at least, of a product that we're going to talk about in a little bit more detail called DIGO. That's with two I's, D-I-I-G-O, what I would maybe call not just another social network or social networking bookmarking slash whatever site or product. It does a lot more than that, and I felt, as Sally and I were talking about topics, that this probably is going to hit a sweet spot for a lot of our teachers because their focus, in many regards, is on education. And they have a whole educators program and features that are all around teaching and are around the educational process and bookmarking for the classroom. And, well, where do we go? So what is it? Maybe, Jason, you could start out and give us your little thumbnail description of what you how you would describe DIGO, your little elevator pitch, if you would.
Yeah, sure. DIGO is basically a social bookmarking service. So I would put it on the same level as something like a Delicious or a Box.net or something like that that allows you to save all of your bookmarks in the cloud as opposed to on your desktop and based on your browser.
Uh-huh.
The thing that sets DIGO apart is the ability to, they have a lot more features with DIGO than with the most popular one, which is Delicious. Delicious, all they basically do is they let you, you can bookmark and tag and share, and you can develop a network on Delicious. It's a little bit more difficult than on DIGO. But what DIGO allows you to do is it allows you to annotate the websites as well.
Uh-huh.
So you can pick out a certain section and highlight that, or you can add a floating comment somewhere on the page, or you can comment on the whole page. And there are different levels of security that go along with that. You can make them public, or you can just share them with specific groups that you're a member of, or you can make it completely private and just for your own reference. There's a lot of flexibility, a lot of power in there.
Uh-huh.
Beyond that, too, they've also added a lot of really neat features lately. You can do some very minimal image editing. You can do annotating and highlighting on images with premium accounts. Another feature that they offer, you can save actually full versions of the web page that you're looking at. So if it's just a specific day that you want to look at, then, or something that changes over time, you can cache a version of it and
right.
save that And you know, do your annotations and everything on that as well. So it's a really a powerful, really flexible tool for basically keeping track of any online information.
Now, I would think, and Gail and Sally chime in here as well, that as you are working your craft, you know, basically using the web to enhance the educational experience for your students, it's important to basically what Jason would call annotate, so that you can come back and that you can find things that you've identified as being important to a particular lesson plan or a particular approach that you're taking with a class, so that you can both either highlight or take notes on, so that the web really becomes your textbook. And more when we talk about Web 2.0, that's really what we're talking about, that our textbooks are the web.
Right. I think it helps you organize. There's two things you're talking about there, I think, organizing and annotating.
Right.
And the organizers get frustrated because they have bookmarks all over the place and particular to each of the computers they use. And then when you explain to them that you can organize all your material in one space so that you can access it from any computer you're on, that's where teachers become interested. And then also the fact that tagging and creating lists and working in groups, there's multiple ways that you can organize your material. So you can put all your social studies stuff together, for example.
Yeah, you've taken basically a two-step process where you've got the web and then you've got your note-taking engine or your organization engine, and they're separate. But what DIGO does is it brings it together, so that you have them all in one place, so that when you revisit a site, you've got that same information. So, Gail, are you a DIGO user?
I am. Okay. I started with Delicious when I started. Well, actually, I started way back with, because of the reason I just spoke to, I started with a place called ikeepbookmarks.com.
Oh, yeah.
And there were many of those around in the early days, and that helped you access from wherever you were. Then when I started using Delicious, just right after I started, I went to a workshop and they were talking about DIGO, and I just had the sense that most people were aiming that way, so I decided I was going to switch over then already. So yes, I've been using it for a number of years now.
Mm-hmm. And you guys are speaking to personal use of DIGO, but taking it to the next level is the whole group use of DIGO. So once you're comfortable in that realm of using it as your cloud-based storage solution for all those millions of links you want to keep up with and all the ideas you have around those links, then you can take it to that next level with group sharing. And I think we have a good example of that with our Wells Tech group, where you form a group of like-minded people around a particular topic, whatever that might be. And when links come up that would be of interest to the group, then you can share them that way. And the whole DIGO tool set, which you can get in a lot of different flavors for different browsers and things like that, allows you to easily tag things for the group as well. And obviously there's ministry applications with that, and a teacher from a teacher standpoint, being able to share things with other you know, fifth grade science teachers, you know, real specifically or whatever. But also from a pastor standpoint, being able to share things with a group of pastors around a particular study you're doing, for instance. So the group ability within DIGO is a really powerful tool as well.
And what DIGO has done then is taken that functionality of a group and translated that into a classroom, where the classroom, if you have an educator account, which is free, provides the facility to create a group out of the classroom. You can give accounts to students, and then as you're working through a particular lesson or a series of lessons, you can provide the appropriate links right within that group, which is a closed network. So there's safety there, there's privacy. And then the annotation or the commenting or the, you know, all the things that DIGO provides can be contained within the context of that classroom setting, which is kind of a new feature, but I think one that probably can get some traction here as teachers figure out how best to do this. I think what's been done, and Sally, you have some great examples of this on your website, is you provide a web page with relevant links. So you have to maintain those, and then the student has to go to that page to make use of those. But this is kind of taking it to the next level.
It is, and you know, I think the ability to embed a lot of these different things in a lot of different ways. DIGO just has a lot of widgets and gadgets and slideshows and things that you can make use of and a lot of different flavors so that you can share these links easily with the group, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Jason, you wrote a blog post, and I think it caught the attention of the folks at DIGO. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah, sure. I love DIGO, obviously, and I had been using it for a long time. And they came out with their new version, version 5. And as I looked at it, I was like, wow, you know, there's some really neat new features in here. I don't see very much out there as far as people doing things to explain what that is. So I went through pretty good detail, and just pointed out the new features and how they might be useful and everything like that. And I was actually contacted by DIGO themselves, and they're like, hey, you know, we know that education is a really big market for us. Would you mind writing another blog post just comparing our stuff with what Delicious has to offer? And then, you know, we'll put that in our resources. And I'm like, oh yeah, sure. That'd be a lot of fun. So I did that towards the end of summer, and just, you know, feature by feature, took a comparison of DIGO and Delicious, and that has been it still gets a lot of traffic even now. You know, nobody reads the rest of it, but they read about the DIGO and Delicious comparison because that's what people want to know, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And
good stuff.
Yep, absolutely. And I think as you're looking at this list, it's pretty easy to see that there are some, especially on the education side, some features within DIGO that Delicious just doesn't have, which makes it hit a sweet spot, I think, for people that are in those educational settings.
Yeah, I think a lot of the features of DIGO make it a little bit more friendly for educators. You know, just the ability to pick and choose what you want to save. You know, you don't just save an entire web page, but you can just highlight part of a Wikipedia article or something like that. Uh-huh. And, you know, there is no copy paste or anything like that. It's all there. It's in your library. But you can just pull that up. And, you know, if you look at it in your library, only your annotations show up. So, you don't even necessarily need to go to that website. You can just see your annotations.
Right. Very, very powerful. I've been using this primarily in preparation for workshops that I've done and other, you know, learning situations. I taught a couple classes for the Wisconsin Lutheran State Teachers Conference back in October, and I didn't have any handouts for the class itself. I put all of the resources that I was referencing in what DIGO refers to as lists, and they can be public or private lists. And I made those public and gave the URL to the people in the workshop. And now they have those resources kind of categorized exactly the way I went through them in sections. And, you know, they can go right to those sites rather than something written down or embedded in a PowerPoint. They've got the resource list there. So there's a lot of applications, I think, for something like this. And you can even play that list of links in a slideshow, or what they call web slides, which is a pretty new feature as well, which works really well if you wanted just to get a quick overview of a bunch of resources that you collected on a particular topic.
We'll have lots of links to include in our show notes. I'm going to have busy fingers typing all this up, but Jason's blog post will certainly be listed there, as well as Martin's sample list that you guys can check out and see what a DIGO list looks like. But one more link we want to include is actually something Jason did with Gail's a group of teachers out at Emmanuel in New London. Jason from way over in Omaha was able to lead an Illuminate web conferencing session and did some training on DIGO. And that's recorded, and people can go and actually listen in and watch as Jason demonstrates all these DIGO capabilities. So a little bit of professional development to include as well.
Very good. We probably should move on, or we will not get this show in under an hour. And I know that we've got a couple teachers here who actually need to practice their craft a little bit later this morning. So
usually we do a little bit of that.
That's right.
Every day.
Good for you. And let's move on to ministry resources.
Sure. I just wanted to put in a quick link to Shepherd Staff year-end process documentation. It's that time of year where church offices need to give out new envelopes and send out giving statements for the year and that kind of thing. And if you are a Shepherd Staff software user, which is a church management software system from Concordia Technology Solutions, you're going to want to do that year-end process in a very specific step-by-step way and in a certain order. It's kind of particular about that. So they have some really good instructions that they've shared out on the web, and we'll include a link to that in the show notes. And they also have a support forum that you can go to specifically about that year-end process. So you can read what others have asked or ask your own questions on their support forum. So we'll have those links included in the show notes.
Ah, the year-end stuff.
Good stuff.
Good stuff. Yep. Let's move on to our picks of the week. Jason, were you coming to the table with a pick today?
I come to the table with two picks. Sally said I could do it.
Okay.
I'm really excited. By the way, this is one of the most exciting things that's ever happened to me. No, not really. I'm really excited that I actually get to do this. This is fun. Two things. So I hope that you guys are okay with that.
Well, if Sally said it was okay, it's got to be okay. So.
She's running the show,
that's
right?
That's right. Absolutely. Go ahead.
One of my picks that actually came across my Twitter stream during the last week or so is a website called packratty.us. And what it basically does is it allows you to hook up Twitter with any of your social bookmarking services. So it originally started out with Delicious, but now they use DIGO, there are a couple other services that go along with it as well. And what it basically allows you to do is it allows you to add a certain hashtag to your tweets or to your to anything that you retweet or share with other people. And then that automatically gets sent over into your DIGO library or your Delicious library or whatever. And it turns those hashtags into tags within your library. So that I thought was pretty cool. And then just after I set that up, I found out that DIGO just came out with that same functionality yesterday. Actually, they announced that functionality to automatically sync your favorites with DIGO. So I'll probably be using that one rather than the Packratty one. But I thought that was pretty cool.
So that's actually two picks right there, you know.
So. Well, I'm sorry. Okay, so maybe I'm.
He's working the system, Sally. He's only been on the show.
There are a couple of weeks where you guys didn't use my feedback, so I'm just making up for that. How's that?
All right, go for it.
The original pick that I had actually was a website called Iearn. That's IEARN. And what this website is, it's actually a global consortium kind of network of educators all over the world looking for, and they set up project-based collaboration activities. So one of the things that they do is they have like a holiday card exchange. So they sign you up in the U.S. and then, you know, you can get paired up with a teacher in Hungary and a teacher in China and, you know, in the Middle East and in South America. And your kids make holiday cards and you exchange them. So, you know, you'll get packages from Brazil or whatever, and they'll get packages from your school. And there are hundreds of projects for all different ages. They're multidisciplinary, and the idea behind the website is to meet that global collaboration kind of strand in the 21st century skills. Where, you know, you kind of get an awareness of what other cultures are like and how how they operate and form those personal relationships over a distance using technology, which I think is a fantastic thing.
Yeah, and that's one of the best ways to leverage technology is to shorten these gaps and bring everybody closer together. And boy, this sounds like it'd be a great experience for a classroom. That's iEarn.org. iEarn.org.
And one caveat, sorry. There is a fee involved. It's $100 per year per classroom, mm-hmm. or $200 I think it's $400 for a school, and that's unlimited teachers. Mm-hmm. But I have access to I can add teachers to a school. We formed our own school with our a class that I'm taking. So if anybody is interested in checking this out, they can get in touch with me. And I'll get them set up, and we can work on trying to do some global collaboration projects if you're interested.
Very cool. Love it. Love it. Thank you, Jason. Gail, what do you have for us today?
Well, since I'm the semi-regular person on the show, I'm going to take the liberty of saying two things also.
Okay. What have we started, Sally?
The first one isn't a pick. It's a thank you to Jason for the time he spent with my teachers here at Emmanuel on the Illuminate call with DIGO. It was very successful. That was our day for professional growth and development in technology at our school. And the teachers usually have to listen to me. So I thought, Jason loves his DIGO, and that's what we were talking about for that day. Why not have him talk about it?
Come
on. And we're going through lists and figuring stuff out. And so many compliments to you, Jason, for doing a good job of inspiring my teachers to do some work with the product after your presentation.
So, Gail.
Well, thanks, Gail. I'm glad that they were able to overlook my shortcomings.
And it gave me further insight into the idea. Illuminate isn't a hard thing to do. Here's another avenue that we really haven't used yet to help, where teachers at other schools could help schools who want, maybe they don't have a person that knows about it. This could be something that we put into use to help each other more often in that way. So I think it brought up a good idea in my mind, and I'm going to pursue that.
Gail, you mentioned that you had a technology focus. How does that work for you? Do you have a specific day each month, or?
Well, I wish I did. I get four time slots a year.
Okay.
And once in a while I get the whole day when we have a day off, and I'll get a half a day or a whole day. But usually four times a year I get them for an afternoon to feature something.
So this is kind of a component of in-service?
Yeah, it's technology in-service.
Okay, great.
Yep. Right.
Probably a great practice for everybody to start, anybody certainly that has that responsibility within their school, whether it be, I assume you talk about websites sometimes and new tools and new products or United Streaming, that kind of stuff.
Right. We did talk about, we just quit United Streaming and went with the Learn 360. So our first one in September was on Learn 360.
Okay.
How to use that. So, right. Then we did DIGO, that now we're doing in February, where you have a new document camera, which we've never had before, so I'll be showing some things with that to them. And
now,
I don't know about
that. Is that a regular, what kind of document camera did you get?
We got the one that goes, the smart camera, just because we do have the smart ports. So.
My wife has been trying to jimmy up a webcam to kind of replicate that, and we're looking for something that's going to do that, have enough feature and resolution to do that, but also have the, so that it's kind of out of the way, so it's not, some kind of hack job that you got all
right.
kinds of stuff going all over the place, so.
I'm pretty sure I have something in my DIGO library.
About that?
That will
okay.
help you guys with that.
Cool.
Okay, I better get
now for your real pick.
Okay, I'm really excited about this. We are in the midst of just beginning to use it for the first time. It's called Museum Box. And the neat thing about this is the inspiration for it. It came from, apparently there was a gentleman by the name of Thomas Clarkson, who was an anti-slavery campaigner. And he had this box, this wooden box he carried around with him. And in the box, he had real artifacts like African produce, transportation, ship diagrams, transportation routes, all kinds of stuff that related to slavery. And so he would use these artifacts to make his case against slavery by pulling them out of the box. So museum box is kind of a virtual box. It's the container for the project. I like to call these like VoiceThread as a container. Museum box is another container. It's where you put your stuff. For example, you could use a museum box to describe your own life and put artifacts from your life in there to, I don't know what your theme would be, but tell about you. Or you can say, okay, kids, I want you to study, find what you can on a Roman soldier. So you can put pictures in here, you can put videos in here, you can put text in here, all different media, and then weave them together to produce your argument or your presentation. So I think it's really a cool thing. They're very teacher friendly. You register your school, and then if you don't have to, but if you do that, and it is free, if you do that, then you have more options as far as the teachers get the option of looking at the stuff before it goes in the box, if you want to do that. So it's just a very cool container. I'm excited to use it. I'm going to try, since literature is the only class I get to teach here currently, the book that we're reading right now, which is Witch of Blackbird Pond. Okay, we're going to be talking about the shipping, the slavery issues, the revolution, all these ideas that come out of that literature story. And kids are going to be building these museum boxes on the various things that come from that piece of literature. So
what
I'm really excited.
What kind of resources can you put in there? Pictures, videos, you know, how does that work?
Ed, we're just starting, so I have an actual process yet. They're just little boxes, they're little containers, and you upload your stuff so that everybody else can see it. The interface looks a little bit like VoiceThread in that you get a box that you're looking at, but it's got, you have all kinds of boxes within one project. Okay, so you can put something in one box, something in the other box. You're building all these artifacts into a box, and then, you know, talking from those artifacts, building your presentation. I'm envisioning I'm going to have the kids do an oral presentation about their box.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, of course, these are all online. It's a social thing. So you can see everybody else's box that they've built, comment on them. So like I say, the idea is a lot like VoiceThread, but a little different interface, and the story behind it I think is pretty cool about this guy that carried the box around, and here you're carrying your box around that you want to make your point with, but it's all virtual.
Right.
Yeah, it actually puts it on the faces of a cube, it looks like. It's a really neat interface, and the kids have the ability to caption and, you know, lots of different ways that they can use it, it looks like. Looks like a lot of fun for the kids.
Well,
yep.
So this is something you're starting right now, Gail, so maybe next
we're
month
on chapter
we'll...
three today. So,
okay. Very
so
good.
At some point here we'll be starting to, I haven't introduced this to them yet. We've done a lot of background for the book, and we're just into the storyline now. So probably when we get done with the book is when we'll start building the box.
Okay, we'll look forward to the follow-up on that.
Yeah.
Very good. Sally, you're up, and I'm only going to give you one pick. I'm sorry, since you gave all your other picks away, actually.
You know, cumulatively, she's got about 160.
That's true.
So she's got
just check out my Digo list if you want
to.
All right. I'm going to point our listeners to Mary Fran's Google Sites tutorial, which is a link I came across via Twitter, and it is done by a Google certified teacher, and she's put together just a beautiful interactive interface to engage the reader and get them building their own Google site. And it makes it really fun to do. It's got an education focus to it. So it's, you know, how to build a site that would be a collection point for all your different school projects and that kind of thing. I know, Gail, you've done that kind of thing there at Emmanuel for different projects that you've had. But maybe there's others who are a little intimidated to stick their toe in the water with Google Sites. And this looks like a really good way to get started, really user-friendly. And so if you're looking for a Google Site tutorial, I recommend Mary Franz. You can check it out.
Thank you, Sally. My pick has nothing to do with education, but this probably would be something of great use to anybody who has to write code, and that would be either HTML, CSS, any kind of scripting code, JavaScript or PHP. And I know we have a lot of listeners who have to dabble a little bit in that as they maintain their websites. It's a open source text editor. Doesn't sound real exciting unless you are having to write a lot of that code, and it's a product called Bluefish. Earlier this year, they released version 2.0. I've looked at it in the past, but some of the features that they've added to 2.0 really make this real useful, especially the number of languages that it supports. So syntax highlighting, help screens, you know, all the things that make a programmer's life easier. So if you are a programmer or even a web designer, or you write any kind of script, or any kind of programming code, Bluefish is an open source project. It's been around for a while, but does a great job at keeping everything straight, forcing you to write better code, because it does have that syntax highlighting and will alert you if there are errors built into your code, whether that be a missing tag in HTML or CSS, something that is malformed, as they would say, and totally free since it's open source. And give it a shot. It works on all platforms, whether you're working on Linux, Mac, or Windows. There's versions for all of those. And it's bluefish.openoffice.nl. So I don't know the exact history of this, but the documentation is very good, and it really is. There's not a large learning curve here. You just basically install it and start using it, and I think well worth the download if you're somebody who works in any kind of code, whether that be, again, HTML or anything more sophisticated than that.
Thanks for keeping us balanced, Martin.
That's right. I believe that is my job.
Those hardcore techies happy.
Absolutely. Don't want to lose any component or any segment of our audience. So.
All right. And now we're going to talk about the segment that likes to solve puzzles, because I know they're out there. Gail and Jason, hopefully you're puzzle solvers as well, and you've been playing along, because we are in the middle of our Christmas 2010 Wells Tech scavenger hunt. And this is a scavenger hunt for QR codes, or quick response codes that can be read with a smartphone or can be translated online as well. And what we're doing is hiding these QR codes in the Wells Tech archive. So we're going to give you a clue. You can dig through or use the search functionality on the Wells Tech website to find this week's QR code and read it to get a clue to our ultimate mystery solution. We're giving out 5 of these clues in total. This is our third one. And so on our December 15th show, I believe, we'll give out our 5th clue, and then our listeners will have the ability to give us that mystery solution. And we're going to have a drawing for a $25 Cafe Press gift certificate, which people can use to buy Wells Tech merchandise and fulfill all their Christmas dreams. So, without further ado.
Say that like you mean it, Sally.
Without further ado, our clue this week actually is the phrase Lighthouse Museum. So, Gail, you talked a little bit about Museum Box. We've talked about Museum Box one other time on the show, and it was in relation to a lighthouse that we had that conversation. So if you can find that episode, then you will find clue number 3 to the Wells Tech Christmas scavenger hunt. So give it a try.
All right, and we'll have 2 more clues to go. You'll need all of them to get to the final answer, of course, so you can go back 2 shows to find clues 1, and then last week we had clue 2. and we'll have two more. And I'm looking forward to how many people come through with the answer here. It's not rocket science, but you do have to do a little bit of investigating, a little bit of searching. So
we're hoping lots of people are doing this along with
us. That's right.
So if you haven't
started,
make
Sally happy. Please make Sally happy.
There you go.
She's really excited about this this contest.
Yep. I don't know. If Ryan Rosenthal is participating, then nobody's going to play.
I was going to say
we've got to create a Ryan Rosenthal rule. I'm not sure. But
no, let's move on. We want Ryan to participate.
We do. Let's move on to community feedback.
And actually, we're going to lead off community feedback with a little bit of a follow-up on last week's
yes.
show as well. Last week was a show of intrigue, and we left our listeners with a challenge to translate the word Makogo. It was a Web 2.0 tool that we were talking about for web conferencing mm-hmm. last week. And, Martin, you were smart enough to figure out a way to figure out the meaning
well,
of
no,
that
and
word.
And I thought, you know, each of these, you know, kind of these cockamamie names that you see on the Internet, you know, have some kind of history. But they had nothing on their website that would tell us where the word Makogo came from. So I thought I would just type that into Google Translate. And one cool feature about Google Translate is you don't even need to tell it what language you want to translate to or from. You just type in a word and it figures it out. And it so happened that Makogo had just one definition in the language of Swahili. And so I would never have known to try, you know, what Makogo means in Swahili, but Google Translate, which is a very cool tool, helped me do that, and it's translated show, which makes a lot of sense for a web conferencing tool where it is kind of displaying your desktop or your presentation. So thus the word Makogo or show in Swahili.
And we were happy to hear from Perry Lund, who's one of our listeners down in Iowa, and he was able to figure that out with mm-hmm. Google Translate as well. So perhaps yeah. others did as well, but that's who we heard from with the correct answer. So
very
good for you, Perry. Thanks for playing along with us there. Next up, we wanted to learn a little bit more about server configuration in congregation and school settings. And so we sent out the word in our podcast last week and also put it out on the Wells Tech Wiki. And boy, did we get a great response. And as a result, we've built a brand new page on the Wells Tech Wiki with all of the different responses we received on the listserv. And then you're certainly welcome to add to that page as well. But a great variety of responses, had a lot of very capable IT type people involved in giving some really thorough responses to different setups for servers and the capabilities that they can have. One of the best pieces of advice I read was if you have a congregation or school who's considering adding a server, determine who's going to install, administer, and support the server, and pursue whatever configuration they're most comfortable with. So,
thank you for saying that, Sally.
You know, I think you're not going to get a one-size-fits-all solution here. I know Ryan Rosenthal, who we were just mentioning, wrote and said, it really pays to have somebody who's a Cisco employee in my congregation,
yes.
you know, and he's got a great setup, but he has a great person that's willing to dig in and support him and help him with that. So that's important as you're considering this.
I mean, I would agree with that for the most part, except if you make it, you know, too complicated and that person happens to leave or get disinterested, then you have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some simplicity that you need to build into this thing as well, or heavily document it for sure.
Yes. So thanks for that. Check out the new wiki page. It's long. It's got lots of great information on it. So check it out.
Yep.
All right. And now we are to our listener feedback from our DIGO group. And Jason, how about you lead off with a couple of DIGO links that you shared?
Oh, goodness. I didn't realize I was doing that. I don't have it in front of me right now.
Okay, I'm sorry. I have down that you shared something about the Bitly sidebar.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty sweet. I was doing some custom shortening on a link that I wanted to share with some of my parents, and I saw that they have a Bitly added a sidebar, kind of a, it's kind of a bookmarklet. You drag the button up into your toolbar, and then you can basically from there, without leaving your browser, you can shorten a URL and send it to Twitter, or you can send it to Facebook or whatever, however you want. And then you have all the analytics that go along with Bitly too. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a pretty sweet application.
Because normally you'd have to go to Bitly, bit.ly, enter the, you know, cut and paste the URL, you know, get the URL back and then do something else. This just kind of creates it right in the same browser experience, it sounds like.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Streamlines the whole process, yeah. Makes it easier to share.
Sure.
And they have also added now a feature where you can bundle a whole bunch of links and do them at one time.
Yep. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. Yeah, that's really useful.
Yep. And one other link that Jason shared was to the teacherscorner.net, which is another collaborative type website, kind of like iEarn that you mentioned earlier, Jason. And this one in particular had a project for December traditions. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that the project that I saved there was I'm having a little bit of trouble speaking all of a sudden. Happens to all of us, right?
Yeah, that's that the show kind of does that to you, Jason.
what the Teachers Corner tries to do is they set up these projects kind of like what iEarn, like what Sally said, but they're free. And to participate in them, you just sign up for it and then do the task. And then there's some sort of either collaborative data gathering or things like that. And this this December Traditions project is just trying to, once again, get that global awareness and that cultural awareness. And kids individually share their things that they do around Christmas time. And then the rest of the group kind of puts it all together, and you know, you view other kids' creations and see what they've got going on, and kind of learn more about other cultures and other people directly from those people, which is, cool. I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Thanks
yeah,
for
and,
sharing.
You know, I know one comment you made on Digo was a neat way to witness your faith as well.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Very good. So one other Christmas link that I put out on Digo was to a Flickr photo that I found of a Wells congregation in the Milwaukee area that used a beautiful picture of their church to develop a Christmas card. And I'm assuming they're going to have those printed on postcards or something to send out from the congregation. And so you'll want to check out this link. I'm just bringing it up now.
That's St. John's.
Mm-hmm. In Milwaukee. And they put a Bible verse on there and Merry Christmas 2010. It's kind of a silhouette of the church against a beautiful sky background. And I thought it was a great idea to develop a Christmas card for your congregation.
Yep, nice photo.
And then one more we can squeeze in here before our time is up, and that's from Ryan Rosenthal, and it's a link to free educational science games, and this is from the Simple K-12 website. So if you are a science teacher, here's a link that you won't want to miss with science games on.
Very nice. Thank you to all our contributors. And again, the best way to do that is, many ways to do that, but you can go to our website, wellstech.wells.net, and offer a comment there. You can send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. You can use Digo and use the Wells Tech Group. Yes, Wells Tech Group. Yes, do it that way. Or you can tag it in Delicious. Many ways to get in touch with us. Leave us a voicemail. We'd love to hear your voice. So thanks to all our contributors this week. And next week, we are back to the book.
Leading 21st Century Schools. And we are digging into Chapter 4, which has more about great Web 2.0 tools that you can use in the classroom. This chapter actually is very subject matter specific, so I think that'll be useful.
Very good. So I'm looking forward to that. Thank you, Jason, for joining us. Really appreciate you being here, sharing your Digo expertise and your technology wherewithal. Thank you for the time.
Oh, happy for the opportunity.
And
it was a lot of fun.
Somebody wanted to follow you or get in touch with you, Jason, how would they best do that?
Easiest way would be to find me on Twitter. I'm at JasonSchmidt123. You can put my email out there, too. It's just JasonSchmidt123@digo.com. Or, I'm sorry, @gmail.com.
Okay.
I don't know what I was thinking there. or they could just Google JasonSchmidt123, and I'll pop up.
They'll find you, so. Yes. Yes, as opposed to Jason Schmidt 122 or.
Yeah, well, you know, I had to. That one was taken. It took me 122 tries to get to that.
Well, good thing it's catchy at least. And Gail, thank you for joining us once again. And how do people follow what you find interesting?
Oh, well, I could give you my DIGO account, which I can't think of it right offhand. It's just the DIGO.com/GPOTRATS.
GPOTRATS, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And find everything that Gail finds interesting.
Twitter is Gail Poltratz.
Very good. Very creative. And Sally is Wells Tech Trainer, and yours truly is M. Spriggs. We look forward to talking with you next week. Let's close the show with the music of Revelation. We're in the Advent season, so we're going to be playing some Advent tunes for you through the rest of the year here. A Voice Cries Out from their album Led by the Light. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
A voice cries out, prepare the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be lifted up, and every mountain made low. A voice cries out, shall be lifted up, and every mountain made low. The glory of the Lord shall be revealed, all people shall see it together.
The mouth of the Lord has spoken it, the glory of the Lord shall be be